Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Paulette Young, one of the hosts on American Health Crisis through Blog Talk Radio. And again, this is Bullying Part 2 by Barbara Coloroso. We're going to learn a lot tonight. I'm just going to give you a little bit of her background. Barbara is an international recognized speaker, consultant on parenting, teaching, school discipline, positive school climate, bullying, grieving, nonviolent conflict resolution, and restorative justice. You're joining us tonight on American Health Crisis, and if you have any questions or you want to talk, you'll be allowed some time to do that. You have to call in at 858-769-4936 and press 1, and then you'll be on the air around the world. Okay, Barbara, you want to go ahead?
Yes, thank you, Paulette. It's a real joy to be able to break this into 3 sessions instead of trying to condense it into 1 hour. The title of the entire program is The Bully, the Bullied, the Not-So-Innocent Bystander. William Burroughs said it so beautifully, there are no innocent bystanders. What were they doing there in the first place? And it isn't the child who bullies and the target only. There's often complicity with their peers. And so that needs to be looked at. We looked at that last time. And then I talked about what bullying is and what it is not. Bullying is not a conflict. You resolve conflicts, you stop bullying and help rewrite the script for the kid who did the targeting, hold them accountable, and give them ways to relate to other human beings in a healthier way, using their leadership skills in a positive way. The 4 ways and 3 means of bullying: a one-time event, continuous and repeated over time, hazing, and the one that gets us all and is such a big issue today is cyber or digital or technology-enhanced bullying. And those can be played out in 3 ways: verbally, physically, or socially. We used to call it relational, shunning, rumoring, gossip, and exclusion. So those were the ways and means of bullying. And then I talked about the bully circle, also known as the trap of comradeship, where kids begin to behave in ways they would never do on their own, but collectively, when there's a high-status social bully telling them what to do and they want desperately to fit in. However, there is a 4th character, and that is the brave-hearted kid who can be a witness, a resistor, or a defender. And we spoke about those in the last session. Hopefully you can find that online. And after looking at the bully circle and why kids are afraid to step in, there are valid reasons and then there's excuses. And we went through all of that. Today I'd like to start with the difference between teasing and taunting. You know, the little ones. I'm a school teacher, and I had little ones come up to me, Mrs. C, Mrs. C, they were teasing me. And I said, oh, sweetheart, I bet they weren't. I'll bet they were taunting you, or you wouldn't be crying about it. Teasing is something you do with a friend. Taunting is something you do to a person you'd like to target. So let's look at the difference. And when do I start teaching that? About 4 and a half. And so let's look at what teasing is. Again, it's laughing with. Think of yourself with a very dear friend. In teasing, the one teasing and the person teased are able to swap roles. You may be better at birthday candles that don't blow out, and your friend or your spouse, who hopefully is your friend, is better at verbal, funny gifts, so to speak. And in teasing, it's not intended to hurt anyone. It maintains the dignity of both parties. It's not ripping somebody apart. And basically, it pokes fun in a lighthearted and clever and benign way. It's okay to poke. Teasing helps cement relationships. Taunting severs them. It's meant to get you both to laugh, and it's a small part of a relationship. You're not teasing all the time. And it's innocent motive, but, oh, have you ever made a mistake? It was the wrong time, wrong place. It didn't come off right. And you see your friend when you're joking with him, you're teasing them, as you've always done, but it's just not a good time for them. And their face drops, and they get a tear in their eye. What would you do? You would stop. You would apologize and say, I'm so sorry, I didn't mean to do that. And then it does stop when the person teased is upset or objects to it. It's just not the right time. But let's compare that to taunting, laughing at. They're very different. There's not a slippery slope where you were teasing and it turned into taunting. Taunting may seem lighthearted, but in taunting there is always an imbalance of power. It's one-sided. The bully taunts, the targeted kid is taunted. They don't dare strike back. Bullies are cowards, but they're not ignorant. They tend to pick on people they know they can get. In teasing, again, remember, it's not intended to hurt or harm. In taunting, it is intended to hurt or cause harm. In teasing, it maintains the basic dignity of both parties. In taunting, humiliating, cruel, demeaning, and bigoted comments thinly disguised as jokes. And online, kids will say, laugh out loud or just joking. But the harm is already done. And then it's laughing at the targeted person, not with them. In teasing, you both laugh. In taunting, one laughs, or the whole group, those not so innocent bystanders, laugh together at the targeted person, which really is devastating for any child, be they 5 or 15. And then remember, it's a small part of a relationship that's grounded in friendship when it's teasing. In taunting, it's meant to diminish the targeted person's sense of self. Their lesson. We build one another up in a friendship, and with teasing, we can do that. In taunting, not true. It's only a small part of your relationship, but in taunting, it's the relationship. They want nothing else to do with that targeted kid but torment them. And verbal tormenting is a form of taunting. It's not innocent in motive. It induces fear of further taunting and can be a prelude to physical bullying, often is. It's not innocent. It's sinister in motive. There's a reason they're doing it, because they know, they've calculated this, that it will impact the person who's being targeted. And contrary to teasing, where you stop when you said something at the wrong time or the wrong place, in taunting, it continues, especially when the targeted person becomes distressed or objects to the tormenting. And I look at this last one, and I then look at some of the anti-bullying programs we have in our schools, which we really have to scrutinize, where we teach young people to say to a target, to the person who's targeting them, please stop, that hurts. That's exactly what the bully wants to hear, and they know they've succeeded. So it will continue. Teasing, we stop. Taunting, it keeps going. So if you can teach little ones, and I start about 4 and a half again, by fourth grade, we can begin to lay the foundation for something that's very similar but very important in the teen years. And that's the difference between flirting, which is playful invitation. I mean, flirting is normal and natural. It helps keep the human race going. There's nothing bad about it. It is nothing like sexual bullying, which is an attack to control and hurt. They may come on very soft at first, but not in a healthy way. I've worked with young girls who are in horribly violent relationships. They say, but he was very nice to me at first. I said, talk to me about that nice. And they'll say things like, well, he always helped me with my phone. Of course, he was checking to see what communication she had with anybody else. He always wanted to know where I was at. He always wanted to be there with me. He didn't want me going out alone. These are all signs of bullying. But young girls have often read that, and it can be boys who are targeted as well. So let's look at flirting. It's a playful invitation, but sexual bullying is an attack to control and hurt. In flirting, it invites both people to swap roles with ease. I can flirt with you. You can flirt with me. However, in sexual bullying, it's based on an imbalance of power. It's very one-sided. And if you've ever seen this happen in the real world, if you can remember, it is not just like when the little one says they were teasing me. No, they weren't. They were taunting her. This flirting, again, is a playful invitation. It isn't intended to hurt. It's an expression of desire. In sexual bullying, it's intended to harm and exploit the other person. In flirting, it maintains the dignity of both parties. There is no demeaning comments made. But in sexual bullying, it's invasive and intended to assert a higher status of the one doing the bullying. Remember, bullying has that imbalance of power and the intent to harm. The threat of further aggression. Once a person is locked into that trap of sexual bullying, they're often afraid to get out because they think it'll get worse. And at times, indeed, it does. In flirting, it's meant to be flattering and complimentary. In sexual bullying, it's intended to be degrading or demeaning, whether it's a physical sexual bullying or a verbal, even the words that you use, calling somebody a kitten or a baby. And if you look at some of the earlier movies in my day, it was a very common thing to do. Invitation to have fun together is what flirting is all about, and enjoy one another's company. In sexual bullying, it's intended to express control and domination. In flirting, it's intended to make the other person feel wanted and attractive and empowered. When somebody flirts with you, you feel even better about yourself. However, in sexual bullying, it's intended to make the targeted person feel rejected or ugly or powerless or uncomfortable. And flirting, it's real important that we understand it's discontinued when the person who's being flirted with becomes upset, objects to the flirting, or is not interested. I work with kids with special needs, and in middle school, I have often had to counsel a boy or a girl and explain to them that when the other person said, I'd just like to be your friend, that is code for I'm not interested in flirting with you. So sometimes we have to break it down and explain it pretty basically. However, it isn't when a child with special needs continues flirting. That's when we step in and say, let's talk about this. It's not bullying. It's just let's talk about it. However, I've seen situations where some girls wanted to get to target a young boy, and he really liked this girl. And she was actually mean to him, and we had to sit down with him and say, you know what? She's not interested. In fact, she's being mean to you. Because in sexual bullying, it continues, especially if the targeted person becomes distressed or objects to the sexual comments. So those of you with younger kids, begin talking to them about the difference between teasing and taunting. Make sure, again, you model that in your own life, that you tease your child or you tease your partner. You tease your mom or your dad in a lighthearted way, and that taunting is not happening in this house. But you need to know the difference, because if you lay that foundation, then you'll be ready to talk to them about how flirting is so different from sexual bullying, but that foundation is there. Now we need to talk about, you've got a child who you know something's going wrong at school, but you can't quite put your finger on that, and they're not going to tell you. Well, there's several reasons that young person, whether they're, again, 5 or 10 or 15 or 19, heading off to university or having 2 years on campus and really distressed that they have been targeted but are afraid to tell. the first reason most kids at any of these ages don't tell an adult is they're ashamed of being targeted. Now think about it. If you're targeted because of your race, your religion, your gender, your physical or mental ability, your economic status, the fact that you're new, none of it makes sense, but you're afraid because that person who's doing the targeting has attacked who you are, things you cannot change. And you start looking at, well, if only I'd have done, maybe I should have. Gavin DeBecker wrote the powerful book, Gift of Fear. And he talked about how a young girl had been stalked by a man who ended up killing several other women, but she escaped from him. And she was beating herself up for, I should have known, look at it. But she said, but he was a lawyer. He wasn't. He was a law student. He was so nice to me. But something in my gut told me something was wrong. And that's what Gavin DeBecker talks about, that gift of fear. Your gut will talk to you. And he had to remind her that you didn't do anything wrong. That person targeted you. And that's why I use the word, and I got it from Gavin DeBecker, the word target as opposed to a victim. But they're ashamed of being targeted. There must be something wrong with me, which is not true. They are afraid of retaliation, and this is so real that it's actually written into anti-bullying laws in most states and provinces in North America and in Europe and in Asia. The actual fear of retaliation wouldn't be there if it didn't happen often enough, and it does happen. And that's why on the anti-bullying laws, there is always a more severe consequence if someone retaliates after the targeted kid or a peer who wants to be brave-hearted has reported what has been done to that targeted kid. They also don't think anyone can help them because often we say, if we don't see it, we're not going to deal with it. Well, then right off dealing with bullying, because bullying tends to happen under the radar of adults. Again, bullies are not ignorant. They are cowards. They do it when nobody else is looking. And on the surface, they come off so friendly. They often get those catch and being good awards because they'll do it to get the reward and then be very mean to the girl in the lunchroom or the boy in the locker room or the young person out on the playground. But they don't think anyone can help them because when they reported it, they said, well, we didn't see it, so we can't deal with it. And along with that, they really don't think anyone will help them because the child does exactly what they're told to do, to go tell an adult. And we say things like, well, if you hadn't done this, or he didn't mean to, they were just teasing, or it's just part of growing up. Boys will be boys, girls just want to be mean. Then they know that nobody will help them. And they bought into the lie that bullying is a necessary part of growing up because we taught them that. Oh, boys will be boys, girls just want to be mean. And bullying should never be a part of any child's experience as they're growing up. And you say, well, that's pretty Pollyannish. No, bullying is about contempt for another human being. And we have to teach young people to care deeply about one another and to share generously and help willingly, which are the antidotes to the three most virulent agents ripping apart the fabric of our humanity today, which I will get into in much more depth, hating, hoarding, and harming in our final session. I tell kids, you know, I don't like every kid, but you must honor their humanity in this classroom because every kid matters. They also think that adults are part of the lie because it's not only peers who are bullying them. How often it can be an adult who targets a kid with a sarcastic comment. One boy in Utah had a teacher in high school had made an ugly racist statement, and the boy felt targeted with that statement. And he stood up and he called her a racist. He could have left out the first word, but he didn't. He was so angry and upset away how children who were minorities were treated in that school. He got suspended. And then when the Civil Rights Division of the Education Department came in and evaluated it, he had to be let back in the classroom, but he'd already lost time out of school, and the teacher never was held accountable. And we, again, we'll talk about that when we get into what we as educators and parents need to do when a child is targeting another human being. Kids also don't tell because they've learned at a very young age that ratting on their peers is not good and is not cool. That's why I like to teach young kids the difference between in, out, or both. You know those self-appointed playground monitors, Mrs. C, Mrs. C, Johnny's on the swing, he's not supposed to be on the swing, he didn't share yesterday, see, that is tattling. All that's going to do is get a kid in trouble. Now, if Johnny is on the swing, it's okay for him to be on the swing, he leaps off the swing, his coat gets caught on the swing, and he's hanging on the swing, tell me, because that will get him out of trouble. Now, if Johnny's not supposed to be on the swing and he's hanging on the swing, it's both I need to know. Five-year-olds get that. And if we can start very young with teaching kids the difference between telling and tattling, if it's going to get somebody in trouble, don't tell me. If it's going to get somebody out of trouble, tell me. If it's ever both, I need to know. Now, I've had little ones come up and say, Mrs. C, Mrs. C, I say in, out, or both. And sometimes they put their eyes down and walk away. And they go in. And I say, thank you for discerning that. And you say, can you use big words as five-year-olds? Yes. Three-year-olds can tell you what Snuffleupagus is, and he's an invisible friend of Big Bird's. Four-year-olds can give you dinosaurs and say to infinity and beyond and give dinosaur names. And so we need to know that we can use the word discern with them. And I've had little ones come up and say, I can't discern it. I said, well, tell me, we'll figure it out. I want kids to know that if they're not sure, best to tell. And then we have to make sure that they're safe when they tell, which means we have to assure them it will be anonymous. When a child comes up to me and says, the other girls were laughing at the new girl, I say, thank you. It took a lot of courage to tell me that, and I promise you nobody will know. And I want you to know that I'm not going to deal with it right now because they'll nail you for telling me. So I'm going to watch, and I promise you the other teachers will watch, and we will catch the young girl or the young boy or the group of kids targeting her. But I want to keep you safe. Number one, we keep the targeted kid safe. Number two, we keep the witness safe. Number three, we deal effectively with the bully, even if it means a bit of delayed justice. Now, a kid sticks another kid's head in the toilet, we deal with it right away. But if somebody was mocking another girl, we tune in. And I'll guarantee you, since most of the time it's continuous and repeated over time, that we will catch them. And the last thing, and the reason they don't want to tell you, is they fear that the adults will take the perpetrator's words over theirs, because bullies want to isolate a child who's targeted, and they don't want anyone to believe them. Now, you say, well, how am I going to know if they don't tell me? Remember, young people, and we do too, speak five ways: our bodies, our face, our eyes, our tone of voice, and what we actually say. Only 80% and 20% is how we break the language down. Only 20% of what you and I communicate to kids is done with the words we use. The other 80% is what we're doing when those words are being spoken or not spoken. It's like that little third grade boy had a teacher who didn't like third grade boys. And he nailed her on it. The kid said, you don't like third grade boys. And she said, oh, yes, I do. I like third grade boys. And the little boy looked up and he said, would you tell your face that then? So we have to know we can read the body language. If a child comes in and you say, how is your day? He goes, fine, and his head is down, his voice is down. That's not fine. And I always don't ask questions. I just say, talk to me about it. Tell me about it. Your body doesn't look like it's fine. Your voice doesn't sound like it's fine. I'm here. And if you don't want to talk about it, we can just sit together, and I'm here with you. And when you feel comfortable to tell me, I want young people to know they can tell you about the good, the bad, and the ugly. Now, it isn't just their body language. There are other clues that your young person has been targeted, and they will give this. And they won't do all of these. And some will only do one or two, and others do a whole litany of them. But if you're clued in to these, shows an abrupt lack of interest in school or refuses to go to school, but always loved to go to school before, something's going on. They take an unusual route to school, and you think, well, that's interesting. It's because they don't want to get targeted. They don't want their lunch money extorted. They don't want to get beaten up. They don't want to get verbally tormented by someone. If there's a drop in grades, but I would caution you, very often when a kid is targeted, their school grades drop. They can't concentrate. They're so upset. However, there are some kids, when they are relentlessly targeted, who do just the opposite. They put all their attention into their schoolwork and their grades go up. And so people will say, well, he couldn't have been hurt too badly by that. No, no. He's suffering inside. So the drop in grades is more typical, but don't think that it couldn't be happening if his grades are staying up there. They withdraw from activities or wanting to just be left alone. Now, they could be dealing with depression, but often when you're relentlessly targeted, depression is one of the effects of being relentlessly targeted. Remember, bullies want you to feel alone, and they don't want you to be believed. If they avoid the lunchroom or eats alone or say, I don't want to eat, if they come home famished and you say, but I sent you with a lunch, well, somebody spit in it, or you didn't like the lunch that they served at school, nobody would let them sit with them. Or I gave you lunch money, well, somebody extorted it, but they're not going to tell you that. So notice if they come home just famished. Also notice if they make a beeline for the bathroom as soon as they get home. Bathrooms are one of the least safe places in schools for kids who are targeted. And so some kids will hold it. Now, it may not be that they were targeted, but they don't want to see what other kids are doing to somebody else in the bathroom when they're mean and cruel to them. And so they avoid it. So that's a clue that something's going on. And taking your money and making lame excuses for it is another sign, because money is being extorted. You better show up with the money tomorrow or else. And you think, well, we're in a pretty affluent school. Nobody needs the money. It's, again, it's not about needing anything. It's about control and power and watching somebody squirm. And then makes the beeline to the bathroom when they get home will be a clue. With little ones, they often wet their pants at school. And you say, well, my gosh, he's never wet them before. He doesn't want to go to the bathroom. They're sad, sullen, angry, or scared after a phone call or an email. Again, tune into their body language. If suddenly they're off the phone, suddenly a game they were playing with other kids online, they shut it down. And they're looking sad or they're angry or scared in their body language but not saying anything. That's a clue. They do something out of character. Maybe they lip back at a teacher. And they've never done that before. Something is going on. They use derogatory, demeaning language talking about their peers. Because what's nice to say about them? They've been mean and cruel to me. Or they even stop talking about their peers. Don't you hang with anybody at school? Nah. Are you lonely? Nah. But they stop talking about peers because they know, why should I say anything? Because it's not going to be pleasant because I can't think of anything kind to say about them. They've been horribly cruel to me. Another one that's a real clue that we often miss because they tend to lie about it, disheveled, torn, missing clothes, and a lousy explanation. My jacket got torn. Oh, it caught on a nail at school. It doesn't quite look like that. Physical injury is not consistent with an explanation. Oh, I fell, but it looks like a good sucker punch to the face. These are all clues that something really did happen. Stomach aches, headaches, panic attacks, can't sleep or sleeps too much are all signs that maybe the child is being targeted. And then the last one is a very difficult one, because sometimes it's a sign of serious depression, some mental health issues, has nothing to do with bullying, or a child is expressing their anger. But other times it can be a sign that something's going to happen. And that's where they create art that depicts severe emotional distress, inner turmoil, or outright violence. Know that these are clues, and rarely is it just one of those things. So if they start to mount up, you know, not only does that child need help, they need support, and know that bullying is something that needs to be stopped. The person doing it or the group of kids doing it have to be held accountable for what they've done. And again, I hate to keep saying that is going to be in our last session when we talk about what do you do. But let's look for a moment, what do we do or don't do when our child has been taunted or physically bullied or relationally shunning, rumor, gossip, and exclusion? So let's look first at what not to do. Don't minimize, rationalize, or explain it away. Oh, boys would be boys. Girls would fall and be mean. He was your friend. He wouldn't do anything to hurt you. It's like we haven't listened to them, what they're talking about. Tell them to fight back. It's not a fight. This is a conflict. No. This is a targeted kid where a group of kids or an individual, it's more often than not a group of kids, targeted them. It's not a fight. Again, bullies are cowards. They're not ignorant. They pick on somebody they know they can get. And when they have done that picking on, then what they want us to know is that, oh, we didn't mean it. We minimize and rationalize, explain it away, and we rush in to solve it. That says to the targeted kid, I can't handle this, that I need somebody else to do it for me. And we want to not tell kids to avoid or ignore those doing the bullying. How often we hear just ignore them. Well, there are six scenes in this horrible tragedy of bullying. And by the third scene, when we tell kids to ignore or avoid, they start beating themselves up. I must be the problem. I am dumb. I am stupid. I am no good. We can't ignore when somebody is demeaning us. It hits our gut. It hits who we are. And so to tell a child to ignore it, Lakoff wrote a wonderful book, Don't Think of the Elephant. What did you just think of? An elephant. So we'd say, don't think of what they're doing to you. Just ignore them. Don't tell kids to ignore. We have to help them recognize that what was done to you is mean and cruel. Here's some ways that you can stand up, and this is how we're going to help hold those accountable for what they've done. And if you rush in to solve it for them, then again, now when they're little, you need more of your leadership, but then you're beginning to model for them that you truly believe that they can handle this and we're going to be by their side, that yes, we will go into the school and we will sit with you. And I know that you can talk to the administration about what was done to you, what you need from them and the like. And then don't confront the perpetrators or their parents alone. This is a hard one for parents to hear. But I'll guarantee you, it tends to run in the family. If you've got a bully, they've learned it somewhere. And so if you feel a great need to confront them, do it with someone that you really trust. And if it's maybe it's the administrator at school, maybe it's a teacher the child feels very comfortable with. And even when I'm talking with school district personnel, I recommend, even if it's the principal, that you have somebody with you as your imbalance of power, so that when a kid who has been accused, and rightly so, of targeting another kid, one of those parents sitting there may be the one they learn from. We want to confront them, but make sure you do it in a safe setting with someone who can be very supportive of you. So now what do you do? Those are the things you don't want to do. But what you do want to do is you say to a kid, whether you're the educator, you're the person in after-school program, or you're the person in the neighborhood, or you're the parent or the grandparent, I hear you. I'm here for you. I believe you, and you're not in this alone. Remember, bullies want the child to feel like they won't be believed and that they are alone. So we have to affirm to them that I hear you. I am here for you. I believe you. You're not in this alone. Remember, watch the body language. If someone comes up to you and their whole body is speaking pain, believe them. Now, occasionally, especially with our young girls who want to get another girl in trouble, they'll say, she called me a gross name, but watch her face. Remember in that first session we talked about the smirk? There'll be an involuntary smirk, meaning she wants to get the other girl in trouble. And then I thank her and I say, I'll keep an eye. I'll watch him. And I watch her too, and most of the time. What has happened is she was just trying to get the other girl in trouble, which bullies try to do. So I hear you. I'm here for you. I believe you. You're not in this alone. It's not your fault. It's so important to let them know that what happened to them, they didn't cause. Now, I work with kids with special needs. Yes, some kids are weird, dorky, odd, have ADHD, Asperger's, miss social cues. And do we work on those issues? Absolutely, but nothing justifies mean and cruel behavior to them. And so I want them to know that it's not your fault. The next thing I want them to know, there are things you can do, and I'm here to help you. We want to teach a young person when somebody is verbally, since verbal is the most common, to be able to breathe out first. Now, we often say, take a deep breath. Well, when I was doing nonviolent training, we learned to breathe out first and then breathe in, because then our body's ready to receive fresh oxygen. And he said, well, I'll never be able to remember that. Well, there's a word that will help you, and you can help your child. And it's whoa. If you go whoa at first, your body also gets into a core posture without you thinking about it. You're breathing out, then you can take a deep breath in. And then I want children to know that aggression begets aggression. Passivity invites it. Assertion will dissipate it. I don't want a kid saying, well, it takes one to know one. Remember, there's an imbalance of power here. They picked on that kid because they know they could get him. So you don't want him to be aggressive back. It only invites more aggression. Passivity, please stop, that hurts, with a sad voice and a sad posture. That invites more aggression. They say, wow, it works. But assertion, and I teach a young person to stand strong, shoulders back, and be able to either make assertive statements or walk away and do self-talk. So let's look at the assertive statement. Roll your shoulders around and down. You breathe out, breathe in, and you say, that was mean and cruel, or that was a bigoted comment, or that was a racist comment. I don't need this. I'm out of here. Teaching them to be assertive. There is an anti-bullying program where you put your hand up and say, stop. I learned a long time ago, you can't tell a bully what to do. However, that hand up is a human survival tool. And I teach the kid to put that hand up, and what they tend to do is put one of their feet back into what looks like a strong yoga pose. It is a strong body pose. They put that arm up, which says, I'm defending myself, without saying a word. They haven't told the bully to stop, which will aggravate the bully. You put your hand up, and then you breathe out, breathe in, turn and walk away, and you do self-talk. I'm a decent, caring human being. She's sure getting her needs met in a lousy way. That's that assertive sense of, it's not my problem, it's hers. Now, these things will help that child. However, there's another important thing. We as adults have to stop the mean and cruel and hold them accountable. So I want to give kids a way to deal with it verbally when nobody will invite you or the girls are ganging up on you. You can be your own witness and go and say to one of the people you feel safe with at school, those girls won't let me eat lunch with them. And I went to sit down and they put the backpack down. And then I said, that was mean and cruel. I affirmed her. That was mean and cruel. And are there any other girls you think you might be able to sit with tomorrow? But I got to tell you, I'm going to watch that group. If you want to walk over and try it again tomorrow, I'm there. I'll watch. Or I'll alert the others to watch. We'll catch them being mean to her, because I'll guarantee you it isn't just in the lunchroom. They're targeting that young girl. So they need to know they can be their own witness. They can be their own resistor and say, that's mean and cruel. I don't need this. I'm out of here. They can defend themselves by putting their hand up and walking away and doing self-talk. So they can be that brave-hearted kid themselves. But it takes a lot to be able to learn that. Now, one of the best ways to teach any of this is the arts. The arts are some of the most powerful anti-bullying programs we have in our schools. So what do? We spend a lot of money on anti-bullying. We get rid of the arts. Think about it. If any of you ever played a musical instrument, you can't play a musical instrument in a passive posture, especially a wind instrument. It's not going to work. And contrary to Schroeder in Peanuts, you can't play the piano in a passive posture. And so when a child walks into band class or walks into music to sing, they roll their shoulders around and down, breathe out, breathe in. They're in a strong posture for themselves, that strong sense that we want to help them develop for that sense of self. That's such an important antidote to bullying. So the arts, shooting a basket, you cannot shoot a basketball in a passive posture. You can't climb a rock wall in a passive posture. You can't do pole vaulting in a passive posture. So the arts, including athletics, can be very powerful anti-bullying tools with young people. So we want to say to them, it's not your fault, and there are things you can do, and I'm here to help you. So you're helping your young people do that. And the next step is so critical, that you report the bullying to school personnel and follow up on what they said they would do to help your young person and hold accountable those who are bullying. We need to be assured that that is going to happen. Now, I want to give some time if anybody had any questions, anything that we just talked about, before I go into the basic antidotes to bullying. Are there any questions from anybody on anything
you
in
know,
the first or
I
second
have a
session? Sure.
I have a question. I guess in my head, if I had to do parenting all over again, I would be training. I would put my kids in karate classes. They couldn't be bullied.
I talk about nonviolent forms of self-defense. My kids were all trained in Aikido. The one thing I have about a problem with so many of the self-defense courses is to give out all these trophies and the like instead of, and that's why we liked Aikido, although if you have a good sensei, a good teacher in any of the martial arts. I have a daughter who was a stunt woman in her early life. She quit flying off cliffs and getting set on fire after she had a child. But she was a stunt woman and studied 4 different martial arts. But her instructors were always about the self-discipline, holding your posture properly. And in Aikido and in so many of the other martial arts, you learn to use the energy of the attack and use it a defensive move yourself to, in a sense, disarm them. So, yes, I think that's very important. I also know that any of the arts can help a young person develop what we're going to talk to in a minute, which is the antidotes to bullying, and what we can help build that up. So, yes, you want our young people to know how to handle it. And then we have to be cautious, just like we have to be cautious about some of the things some of the anti-bullying programs talk about. It was, please stop, that hurts kind of thing, or it takes one to know one, and the like, the aggression or the passivity. There can be hazing, which is a form of bullying, in the arts as well, in drama and chess and the orchestra, not just in athletics. So we want to keep our eyes open for all these other clues that somebody's targeted. But you're right, Paulette. It's very important that our kids have a strong sense of their own body and the power that they have. And there's a wonderful children's book, Trevor Romaine wrote it, called Bullies Are a Pain in the Brain. And he said, if it looks scary, run. If it's 6-on-1 coming after you, you run. You may look silly, but you'll look alive. I mean, there's a time we teach our kids to get out of there and to live for another day kind of thing. Yes, and our young people today are dealing with so much of this kind of violence, but much of it is rooted in the absolute contempt for another human being, which is the basis for bullying, that setting aside, dehumanizing of another human being. The most effective groups today are racial and sexual bullying, and so you look at young people who might be at risk for that. And we are seeing a rise in anti-Semitism and Muslim hatred toward Muslims, as we saw over the last 8 years. It was always there, but now it's like it's been given permission to be there. And if it's in a toxic climate that our kids are growing up in, they learn that. And that's why our homes and our schools need to be safe harbor for every child. When every kid walks in that door, they need to know, I hear you, I'm here for you, I believe you, you're not in this alone. You're listened to, cared for, very important to me. So, yes, any other questions? Anyone, you can talk because you're unmuted. Well, then what I want to go, if there's no questions here, I want to go into the antidotes to bullying. And this is for a kid who bullies other kids. This is for kids who are those not-so-innocent bystanders. And it's for kids who have been targeted. And you'll find in those brave-hearted kids who are those witnesses, resistors, and defenders, the antithesis of the bully, they have all four of these. And what they have is a strong sense of self. Now, notice I didn't say strong self-esteem. Martin Buber said, I am I and you are thou, and we have a common humanity. That's the we. In bullying, I'm an I, I'm unique, and I'm special, and I put you outside my circle of caring and dehumanize you, turn you into an it, not a thou. And so if I have a strong sense of self, I recognize my gifts, my talents, my weaknesses and my strengths, and I recognize that in relationship to you, the thou, the other human being I'm encountering right now. And that in turn creates community. When I put you outside my circle of caring, I can do anything to you and not feel any shame or compassion because you're less than me. It's the act of dehumanizing another human being, which, as I said in the first session, is what bullying is all about. So a strong sense of self means I do recognize that I have gifts and talents and strengths and weaknesses in relationship to the other people that I encounter in my life. And that, in turn, creates community. The second thing is being a good friend. Now, today, with the online influencers and how many likes did you get and how many friends do you have, believe me, you can't have 500 friends. That's not what friendship is all about. And with little girls, very often you'll hear them saying, well, I don't want to be your friend today. or I want to play with this other girl, as if you can't play with another girl. Just think about this in terms of friendship. You are a friend of the other person in a different way than you are a friend to the other person. In a threesome, you can't all three be friends in the same way, because friendships involve a one-on-one. You can have all different levels of friends, and I'll bet some of you listening in tonight have a spouse or a partner who has a friend you don't like, and that's okay. You can be civil. You can be pleasant. You just don't have to have them as a friend, because friendships are powerful bonds. My children still have friends from their kindergarten and grade school days, and those are special bonds. And then they have friends through their high school years and through college. But it's not a large group. And when you use the term frenemy, no, you can't be a frenemy. That's a friend and an enemy. They don't go together. So we've got to watch the language. We have to teach our young people how to be a good friend. And I'm going to go back to Trevor Romain, who wrote Bullies Are a Pain in the Brain. He also has one other wonderful book called Cliques, Phonies, and Other Baloney. And those cliques can start about 5 years old and really get entrenched in the middle years, and can go all the way up through senior centers, adults, elders. So we want them to understand that cliques are not healthy. Friendships are. And what does it take to be a good friend? The third antidote to bullying is having at least one good friend who is there for you. Now, with young people who have been targeted before, have special needs or learning abilities, and they're entering a new school, because remember, we target because you're new, and if you're different in any way, that's a double whammy. I want to be sure that that child has a buddy, perhaps a year older or 2 years older, who will buddy with them, who has a strong sense of self and the ability to make friends and can be a good friend. So having at least one of those is the antidote. So you have a strong sense of self, being a friend, and having at least one good friend there for you. And then the last is so critical, online and offline, because what has happened today with our young people, we used to say the online world and the real world. That doesn't even make sense. It's the online, offline, which have merged to become the real world for our young people. And so it's that ability to successfully get into a group and know when to get out and how to get out of a group. Those of you who have teenagers, saying to your child, if you are uncomfortable where you're at, you don't like what's going on, call me. I won't question it. I'll just come and get you. And now if they've been drinking and they called you, you come and get them. Don't say a word. And then at 5:30 in the morning, I wake them up when they're still feeling that hangover, and I say, look, we need to talk. But it's a matter of teaching them how to get into a group. And again, the difference between telling and tattling comes in here. But those are the antidotes, whether you are the one who targets others, you're the one who is being targeted, or you're the ones who go along to get along as the not-so-innocent bystanders. So I hope this has been helpful today. The next session, I'm going to talk about you can report bullying if it is your own child or if you're an educator in your school. We'll be talking about the difference between discipline and punishment, why one works and the other appears to. I'll talk about the difference between a mistake, mischief, and mayhem. Now, a clue, all bullying is mayhem. But not all mayhem is bullying. It's not a mistake to call somebody a gross name. It's not a mistake to intentionally shut them in a locker. It's not a mistake to force them to drop their books or to post a picture online to embarrass them. These are not mistakes. They're also not mischief. Mischief is tic-tac-toe on the table. Mistake is a mark on the table. mayhem is writing a child's name in a gross term. World of difference. And how do we deal with all of those? And then after we've looked at the difference between discipline and punishment, I would like to go into the steps to rewriting the script for the children who are targeting other children, because they have leadership skills, they're sorely misusing them, and we have to help them become the person that they can be rather than a character actor. If I would say to some of you, Henry Winkler, those of you who knew his show, Happy Days, would go, hey, because he was known as the Fonz. He's a phenomenal Shakespearean actor, and he writes children's books. But we know him as the Fonz, and the problem with a child who continues to bully others is that they become a character actor. They learn the skills of mean and cruel instead of how to be a good friend and how to get into a group and get out. They run the group. So they don't know how to do that, and they're misusing their leadership skills. They also then don't form healthy relationships. People don't want to confide in them because they've seen what they've done to other kids, so the trust is gone there. And then we begin to see them as a bully, and we miss those leadership skills that could be so good. So we want to rewrite the script for them, help them learn to use the talents that they have in a way that's not mean and cruel. We also need to work with them on their sense of entitlement, because if they believe that somebody is less than them, they have a sense of entitlement. So I will address all of that. And then we need to look at the three P's, strong anti-bullying policies, strong anti-bullying procedures in place. And the last is not anti-bullying. It's programs in place that help our young people deal with hating, hoarding, and harming, those three virulent agents ripping apart the fabric of our humanity. How can we help them care more deeply, share more generously, and help more willingly? You cannot do those and target another human being. So that'll be our session next week. It's been a real joy, Paulette. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you.
And I look forward to the next session.
I do too. This is excellent. You're giving us all tools to work with. And I greatly appreciate you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we will have the third part on bullying next Tuesday, same time, 8 p.m. Pacific time. And it's the same number that you would dial in. It's 858-769-9436. And then press 1 if you want to be heard. Okay, thank you, Barbara.
Yeah, you're welcome. And if anyone would like more details about this, you can go to our website, www.kidsareworthitallspelledout.com. And in the far right corner, you can see an excerpt, 68 pages, that I excerpted from my full-length bullying book, The Bully, The Not-So-Innocent Bystander. It's free. You can download it and talk with your school districts and talk with other parents in your community and with your own children. Again, thank you, Paulette. It's been a joy.
Yes, and then Barbara's also available to speak in community or at a conference, and the number you can dial into is 303-478-8253. Again,
yes, and 303- I answer.
478-8253. And there's lots of information on her website. Okay, thank you.
Good night, Paulette. Thanks for
Good
the
night.
Opportunity.
Oh, thank you.